Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And sure, we New Yorkers have museums, great restaurants, Broadway, enviable diversity, and a comprehensive public transportation system, not to mention a great public radio station. But here's the flip side. Our unemployment rate is approaching 8%. It's really over 8%. An apartment described in the real estate section as a steal may instill fear in your heart. That's if you're lucky enough to get a mortgage. Schools are uneven, traffic is terrible, and the price of your monthly Metro card will see a huge bump if the state legislature can't get it together. Meanwhile, the states with the five lowest unemployment rates are, any guesses? Wyoming, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa. The website MainStreet.com just granted Nebraska the top spot in its happiness index. A median-priced home in Kansas City has remained stable and affordable. So what do all these places have in common? They are located in the zone of sanity, or at least that's what my next guest calls it. So what can we here in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut region learn from Kansas City? With us is Joel Kotkin. He's a presidential fellow in urban futures at Chapman University in Orange, California. He writes the New Geographer column for Forbes. He's also the author of The City, A Global History. Joel Kotkin, welcome back to WNYC. Hello.
Wonderful to be here.
Define what you call the zone of sanity.
Well, basically what I was talking about was that there is a part of the country that never, in many cases, never really participated in what you might call the big boom of, either the big boom of the dot-coms or the big boom in the housing bubble and the stock market bubble. So they never went up very much, but they aren't going down very much either. So they're kind of like your kind of solid, stolid parts of the country, which have been really able to withstand so far, at least, what's been going on with the national and world economies. And there are lots of reasons for it. I mean, to some extent, it's the fact that the agricultural base that these areas have and the resource base have managed to maintain themselves reasonably well, and the fact that they're really not very expensive places. What's probably the most shocking of all is that a place like Kansas City, for instance, actually has a higher rate of net in-migration from the rest of the country than places like Los Angeles, New York, Chicago.
Maybe some people after the Binghamton massacre on Friday, and even though that's in New York State, it shares some things economically with the Midwest. Maybe some people were surprised to see how diverse it is there.
Well, you've been seeing this movement of immigrants for quite a long time. I mean, one of the things that I'm just finishing a book about America in 2050, and one of the things that's going to happen and is already happening is many of the amenities and the diversity that used to be really just a kind of New York, Chicago phenomena, later on became a California phenomena, is now something that you can see in lots of places around the country. You'd be amazed as you drive around Fargo, North Dakota, and you see Vietnamese markets and you see Indian restaurants. And this is happening in two ways. One, into the middle of the country, and then, of course, from the center cities into both the inner ring and eventually the outer ring suburbs, so that many of the amenities that were only available in a place like New York when I was a kid are now becoming more widespread.
Listeners, what can New York learn from Kansas City? What can New York learn from any of the five lowest unemployment states, Wyoming, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Iowa? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or do you reject this theory? 212-433-9692. Or post a comment or a question for our guest, Joel Kotkin, to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Joel, are you saying mostly that residents in the zone of sanity didn't make as many bad personal financial decisions as the rest of the country, and that maybe they have more conservative old-fashioned banks there that didn't either?
I think that's one of the things that you find. You find that as you, and I'm going to be doing a column on this, I think, down the road, is all over the country, and not just in the zone of sanity, you have these very solid community banks where people just didn't go and invest in these sort of fancy derivatives and and CDSs and all this kind of all the various instruments that were so popular on Wall Street. And, of course, they didn't speculate on the fact that they would buy a house that they couldn't afford, figuring that its value would go up in the next year or two by 20-30%. This didn't happen in the middle part of the country. Again, it's not so much a question of what New York can learn. It's for New York and L.A., where I live, to begin to understand what the nature of the competition is, that our competition is not just China and Europe, but also within the country, and that what are the things that we can do. And there are some good things that I think could happen, let's say, for New York. I just finished a study with the Center for an Urban Future on the New York middle class, and I don't know if you had John Bowles on for that particular story, but one of the things that we found is that the thing that was driving people out of New York more than anything else was cost. The cost of housing, the cost of school, the cost of just day-to-day life. And if New York becomes more affordable out of this recession, although real estate speculators won't like it, it may be a very good thing long-term, because there are many, many people that we interviewed who really would love to stay in New York but end up moving to maybe not Kansas City but certainly to some other parts of the country because they really can't afford to have a middle-class lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, our last guest referred to the low inflation in the United States of the last 10 or 15 years, but I don't know what they measure. Maybe you know what they measure when they take the unemployment rate, but they must not be measuring housing, health care, or higher education, which is sucking everybody dry.
Right, and of course, these effects are particularly profound in places like New York or California, where the cost of housing was very high, I know this because I have young children myself, you have to start thinking about private schools. I mean, you know, we're worried about my daughter being rejected to go to a kindergarten that's $17,000 a year.
Where do you live?
I live in L.A.
All right. What does Kansas City have to teach New York? Kim in Ridgewood is going to be a contrarian on this. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Hi, Brian.
So?
You know what? I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, and my mom just called me. She still lives there. She called me yesterday and said that they were on the top of that happiness index or something, and
right.
I was incredulous. I mean, I hear your guest talking about how Kansas City and those places are getting a lot of the amenities that the coast used to have, and I just, you know, I moved here 4 years ago. I get back to Omaha once a year to visit friends and things, and I just don't see it. And I spent a lot of time in Kansas City too, because in Omaha there's nowhere else to go. There's no mountains, there's no large bodies of water, there's nothing to do. So all you do is go to Kansas City. So I've spent a lot of time in Kansas City.
Now, wait a minute, Kim, stay there, because here also, you're from Omaha, Todd in Brooklyn is originally from Kansas City. Maybe you two guys ought to meet. Because, Todd, you're going to continue to pile on here, right?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am, Brian. It's boring there. I go, like she said, I go home, and I spend most of my time sitting in bars. And there's just not a lot going on. People watch a lot of television, and there's just not a lot of culture there. There's not a lot to do. So it's a big trade-off. Move to New York, save a little money, but have a lot less fun.
All right. Joel Kotkin, take it on.
All right. Well, first of all, I mean, I think obviously people who move to New York, particularly both of you sound like you're relatively young, they do it for a reason. They just like they come to Los Angeles for a reason. And I think that's great. And I did it myself. And, you know, because I went from New York to Los Angeles. So I guess I never even – I only stopped
briefly.
You didn't
stop. You flew over flyover country.
Although I spend a lot of time there. My business partners are there. But I do think that it is a trade-off. I thought it was a very good point. And it's what we found in the New York study, which was very interesting, is that around the age 30, 35 is when a New York, and we found the same things true in Los Angeles as well, when you get up around age 35, things start to change for a lot of people, not for everyone. But if you don't have a trust fund and you want to live a middle-class lifestyle in New York City or Los Angeles, for the younger generation. I mean, I'm a boomer, and as a boomer, I was able to get into the L.A. property market early enough so that I can live in a nice mm-hmm. house. It's not luxurious, but it's nice. If I was coming to Los Angeles now, even with the lower prices than before, it would be very, very difficult to live here. And now, I do think there is a great opportunity for New York City right now, mm-hmm. and that is if the prices of property go down as they have here in L.A., 25%, 30%, 35%, 40%, this could be a great opportunity for New York. Because I agree. I think New York is intrinsically an extremely attractive place to be. And I think that the key thing is, can you keep the cost down low enough to allow for entrepreneurs to do things
right.
and for people who want to stay in New York to stay in New York?
Makes sense. Todd and Kim, thanks to both of you for calling in. We're with Joel Kotkin, a presidential fellow in urban futures at Chapman University in Orange, California. He writes the New Geographer column for Forbes magazine. He's the author of The City, A Global History, and talking about his piece, I guess, on New Geographer, right? That
It was in Forbes and New Geography, yes.
Okay, and it asked the question, what can New York learn from Kansas City? This brings up the Richard Florida question, as I call it.
Right.
Richard Florida is a thinker on these issues. He's been on this show a number of times, who has made the case that creative talent drives economic growth, and that places that have creative economies will recover from the recession faster than other places. So cities like New York and Boston and L.A., that still have concentrations of creative and intellectual capital, that might be more important than trying to do the, you know, the tortoise versus the hare, slow, steady, conservative banks thing. What do you say to Richard Florida?
Well, I mean, Richard and I have been, of course, back and forth for many years, and you know, I just think that the future that he portrays is a terrible one for the United States, and that by his theory, the suburbs, the middle part of the country, will all go into decline, and there will be a relatively small group of people who can afford to live in places like New York and Boston and L.A., and they will be the beneficiaries of what happens economically. First of all, I think the theory is kind of off. This notion that we as Americans can live completely off our brilliance and creativity and not have to do the basics is a joke. And, you know, I know you just had somebody on from China, but I've taught students from China, from India, from lots of developing countries. Do you think they have any intention of having a world where they have trillions of our dollars and they're going to just pay us to be creative and innovative? And,
but by creative, Florida doesn't mean experimental theater. He means the new technology industries that are going to drive the future economy. And that the people who are interested in that just aren't likely to go live in places that aren't trying to make life amenable to them culturally.
Well, you know what? Let's take a look at where the biggest concentrations of technology are. A, they're overwhelmingly in suburbs. Overwhelmingly. I mean, it's not even close. Has anyone ever spent time in Silicon Valley? I mean, you want to talk about boring suburbia? There's a good one. Raleigh, Durham, also one of the world's most boring places.
Although you could call Silicon Valley, you know, part of the greater San Francisco area.
Yeah, but San Francisco is nothing more than a kind of appendage and service center for Silicon Valley. I mean, Silicon Valley is now so much more important. San Francisco as an economic unit has become very irrelevant. I mean, I've been studying that for a long time. I went to school at Berkeley, and I covered the rise of Silicon Valley personally.
But maybe not as a cultural unit that influences the whole region? I'm just asking.
I think it has probably more to do with the physical amenities and the climate than anything else. I think San Francisco has its advantages, but then if you take a look at where tech growth is taking place, over the last 10 to 15 years, you know, Dallas, Texas, is, you know, again, suburbs in almost every region of the country, including in New York. Most of the tech business is not in New York City. It's in many cases removed from New York City. And, you know, it obviously uses the facilities, the airport, the amenities of New York City to some extent, but it's really not focused on New York City. And this is true almost everywhere, right, even in Boston. So what you're finding more and more is that a lot of tech growth, if you want to just talk about tech, takes place all over the country. Some of the fastest growing tech regions are in the Great Plains. I mean, it's just the whole. It's just too neat to say, well, the hip cool places are going to have all the tech. Yeah. They will have some, but they have a very hard time growing companies. And one of the
let's get a couple of more voices on real quick. Rashid in Jersey City. We have about 20 seconds for you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Joel Kotkin.
Well, I guess
author
we
of
got
the.
A little-
The new geography. That's okay. We're going to go to the next caller, who is Mike in Pauling. Mike, we have 20 seconds.
Hi. Yeah, I grew up in South Dakota, lived in Minnesota, and I just really and moved here to New York. And my quality of living is not that much better. And I just think the way we value things are quite differently. And people can be just as happy in the Midwest as they are here, and I was just as happy there as here, and things do not necessarily make my life that much better.
Thank you very much. Rick in Manhattan, you have 20 seconds.
Hi. I'm hoping the study took into account the tax dollars that go to those states from states like New York. I'm sure they receive far more in federal taxes than they pay. Wyoming's about the size of a congressional district in the city.
What about that, Joel? And a number of people are calling in to say exactly that hey, New York subsidizes these places by sending more tax dollars than we get back opposite of them.
Well, I think that's probably been the case over recent years. But I do think that with the Democrats in control of the Congress, I think that pattern is probably going to dissipate to some extent. But there's no question but also New York pays a lot of – the biggest reason New York has such a big tax burden is not because they're sending money to North Dakota. It has to do with the public employee pensions, the cost of doing everything. I mean, the fact that Medicaid costs twice as much in New York than virtually any other state is not the fault of Kansas City. So, I mean, I think it's very important that the city look at its basic cost structure and begin to address it. Why is energy, which should be a great advantage of New York because of relatively less energy use per capita, but the cost of energy is twice as high in New York than it is in most parts of the country?
And that's where we have to leave it with Joel Kotkin from the Chapman University in Orange, California. He writes the New Geographer column for Forbes magazine. He's also the author of The City, A Global History. And he was here to ask the question, what can the New York area learn from Kansas City? Joel, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.